Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. At the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be talking to John A. Vanek about his book. It's called Miracles. It's a fascinating book, and I'm looking forward to talking to him. But right now, I get to turn to an award-winning author, and I am so thrilled because I love suspense books. I love books that just keep me turning the pages. So it's really a lot of fun to welcome to Joy on Paper, Penny Gochin. Hi.
Hi, Patsy. Great to be chatting with you.
Well, I'm so happy that I finally got you on. I had a few, I think I had you scheduled and I had some interruptions, but it's so great that you're here today because, well, you know, as I said, I love a story that keeps me guessing. And your new book, which was released in July, and I was already scheduled during that time, is called The Woman Underwater. And I think it's fascinating.
Oh, that's great to hear. Thanks so much. I enjoyed writing it.
Well, you know, it's always great when you have a character that people really can relate to and really start to care about very much, as you have here with Victoria Sands. I thought that was just terrific writing.
Wow, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
So, of course, now this previously, of course, you're well-known and you're an award-winning author, as I said, and you have the series called Elizabeth Pennington Mysteries and another series, right?
Yes, the Elizabeth Pennington series is set on the coast of Maine in an old family-run inn high up on a precipice looking out over the ocean. And then I've got two that are set in the Caribbean, the Olivia Benning mystery series. Those are set in the U.S. Virgin Islands.
Okay. Well, you're a busy girl here. You keep yourself busy. Now, the new book is, let's talk about, I love the setting. I always, having lived in England and been around, you know, boys' schools and boys' academies. As a matter of fact, I lived in a village, and just down the road, in my little village, there were only three stores. Well, there was the sweet shop, which was across the street from my little cottage, and then just down the street, the butcher shop, and then there were three pubs. So that was the entire village. And the little boys would come over from the boys' school and being, you know, the way little boys could be, they would talk Latin when they were in the sweet shop just to impress, you know, the villagers. And they were so surprised when they discovered that I studied Latin. That was my main subject in high school, 4 years of Latin. And I started talking to them in Latin. They were an American. They couldn't believe it. So I got a lot of that. And later on, I became friends with people at the school, and I got, you know, to go to events and things. So I love the setting of this school. Tell us about it.
Well, it's a private all-boys boarding school in Connecticut, in New England. And it's set in a very rural town that I've called Litchfield Falls. There is a Litchfield, Connecticut, but I've named it Litchfield Falls. And the buildings are very English looking. They're you know, the brownstone and the slate roof, and there is actually a all boys boarding school in Connecticut that was the inspiration for this. And there's a pond in the woods nearby. I mean, it's all very, you know, very rural, very charming, but the perfect setting for something to get, you know.
Oh, yeah. Things can go wrong quickly. One of my fun things when I lived in this little village was part of my daily walk was going through the graveyard, which was lots of fun, because usually that would be just before I would, in those days, you had to wait for the pub to open. So I'd go for a walk through the graveyard, and then the pub would open. I could get my gin and tonic. So
sounds like a good stroll with an end result.
It was. And so, but I love the flavor that you managed to put here with this boys' school. You do have that sort of English touch, and there is a element of creepiness in it. But I think you must have had fun writing this.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you know, it was, and it all started with, you know, I do a lot of what ifs, you know, when I hear, you know, a news story, or I learn of something that, you know, has tragically happened to an acquaintance. You know, of course, my first reaction is to, you know, my heart goes out to them. I, you know, say a prayer for them. But then I go into this, you know, what if mode. You know, what if that were me? What if that particular event happened to me? What would I be feeling right now? What would I do? What would I say? And so that's kind of how this whole story came about. It was kind of a what if. Gee, you know, what if, you know, what if my husband went missing? And it just. It just goes from there. But it's, you know, that's just the way my mind works. You know, I try things on for size, which can be terrifying at times, because some of the things that I think of and try to imagine being in that situation. But I think that's just part of being a writer, and some of the things I'll run with, and others I'll discard as just too terrifying, and no, I'm not going to go down that road. But it was a lot of fun to write, and there was so much to the characters, and, you know, I loved the characters. There's a lot of me in Victoria, but in particular, Millie, I've gotten so much feedback about Victoria's mother, Millie, because she's very quirky, and, you know, she is actually based on a couple of real people that I observed in real life. And one was someone who, it was up in New England, I was doing a book signing, and it was winter, so she had just come in from the cold, and she had, you know, multiple layers on, and so she starts peeling off her layers and throwing each one over an arm, and you know, her overcoat, a cardigan, her hat, and then when she got done peeling off layers, she patted herself down from head to toe. And then she turned and looked at me and realized I was watching her. And she said, I have to be sure I don't take off too many layers. My daughter hates when I embarrass her in public. And so the two of us had a great laugh. And then she walked off, and I thought, oh, she's got to be a character in one of my books. So I pulled out my phone and jotted down some notes. And she just was so much fun. And then after that, I saw a woman biking past the front of our house one day. She was very colorful. She was an elderly woman with, you know, kind of frizzy hair, but, you know, colorfully dressed and interesting leggings on. Even her bike was colorful. And I just thought, okay, I've got to take her and the lady that I saw at the book signing, put her together and make this character and make, you know, Victoria's mother, and then just take it from there, just embellish her. And she's just she provides the comedic relief to the you know, tense, suspenseful situation.
Well, as a script writer, I can say she's a ham, and she stole she stole that movie that I saw in my head, because Victoria Sand is it's a great name, and I really love the way you developed her. You know, she's a wife, a mother, and you start off the story, and we discover that, you know, her husband disappeared 7 years previously, and he was a schoolmaster at the school. But when I saw whenever I really like a book, I see it as a film in my head. Like, I want to get on my old Selectric and start writing a script for it. And I just kept thinking, oh, my goodness, some actress is going to love Millie's part. I mean, there are some senior actresses out there who will, you know, they will ham it up. They will work it They will really steal it and get an Academy Award nomination for that.
I think you're right. I think it would be a lot of fun to play that part. But thank you. I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah, well, I think that would work as a film, definitely. So, you are great at writing suspense, great at writing mysteries. You know, this whole, there's an element here that you have to keep the reader always sort of a little bit tingly, like what's going to happen. You have the mother and the two sons. Explain, what else do you want to explain about the story without giving away anything major?
Well, essentially, you know, as you said, when the story starts, Victoria's husband has been missing for almost 7 years, and he'd been a teacher at the all-boys boarding school. And he disappeared essentially without a trace, and no witnesses came forward. The police had very little to go on, and what little they had fizzled very quickly. They never even found his car.
He went on a trip to New York City for a day, and it's a very surprising thing. Your husband goes to New York City for a business meeting for one day, one night. He's supposed to be gone, and he's supposed to be back the next night, and there you are, blah. He's not there.
Yeah, it was supposed to be a very routine. It was a field trip that the kids take, every fall, and nobody thought anything of it. And in fact, the morning that the day he left, the last time she saw him was when she ran out the door to get the boys to the bus, and she didn't even kiss him properly. She just kind of gave him blew him a kiss and never even hugged him or gave him a proper kiss. So. So yeah, the whole day, it was just a very, normal day. And so then 7 years have passed, and everybody but Victoria have given up on finding him or him. But she firmly believes that he's coming back. But everyone around her is trying to convince her, to snap out of it and realize that it's been 7 years. He's not coming back. But she. One of the reasons she believes he is still out there is every year for her birthday, she still receives these beautiful coral-colored roses that he's been sending to her since they were first married.
Ah.
So she's,
She lives in hope, and the reader lives in hope, and you never know. And that's why they have to read your book, right?
Right. That's right.
That's right. They want to find out. What in the world happened to him? Because, that's the whole thing of keeping us in suspense. And when I was reading it, as I said, I saw it as a film. I don't know, if it's been optioned yet, but I have a feeling that maybe people will come out of the Hollywood woodworks. And maybe
awesome,
and pick it up, because you write very cinematographically. It would be an easy book for a screenwriter, would love it. There's so much there. There's a lot of meat to the story, which is always fun. When you're given a book to write a screenplay for, sometimes it's really difficult. There's just not enough there, and you have to invent stuff. But in this case, you've put it all in there, as I said, because it's a multi-layered story.
Wow, thank you very much. That's very kind of you.
So let's go back a little bit. My listeners are always interested in, you've reached a really high point where you get a book, I think, where that really has a great potential here. To become a film, and people are going to, then say, how did it happen? Were you an overnight success? How did it happen? When you wrote your first book, what was it like, and how did you feel?
Well, when I wrote my first book, I didn't even know I was writing a book. I just have always loved to write, and never pursued it professionally. I went to college and chose a very practical major. I chose accounting, and I enjoyed that, did very well with it, but I've always been very left brain and have always, I'm sorry, right brain. And I've always loved to paint and draw and all that stuff. So once I got out of college, I let myself go back to, you know, doing all the stuff that I love to do besides having a career. But anyway, and the last real job that I had working for someone else, I headed up a reporting section in a large savings bank where we produced the financial statements, and I wrote up the financial analysis that goes with the statements, which is not, you know, certainly isn't riveting text, but it, you know, it's nothing creative there. But I think it sparked that interest of mine to get back into writing. And so when I sat down to write Murder on the Precipice, which was my very first one, I just had this story kind of floating around in my head, and I was just playing with it, you know. And I immediately said it was going to be a murder mystery. I was going to set it on the coast of Maine, and I had some characters I was thinking of. So I just was playing with it in my head to the point where I thought, gee, I've got a lot up there. Maybe I should start writing. You know, this could be a fun short story. So I started to write. And, you know, it would be after everybody had gone to bed, you know, that my kids and my husband, everybody was asleep. So I sat down with the computer and just started writing. And I'm such a night owl that, you know, that was a great time for me to be writing. And I just wrote for the love of writing, had no thoughts of anyone reading it, which actually was quite liberating. I could write whatever I wanted to. I wasn't writing to an audience. And when I got done, it was kind of long. And I thought, gee, I wonder if this is long enough to be a book. I mean, I really, and the other question was, I wonder if anyone would want to publish it. So I knew enough about the industry to know I had to send out, you know, query letters to publishers and agents and so forth. And so I went and got, you know, back then, I got this book of the writer's market and just went through and found publishers and agents that would were interested in that genre, but also would even consider an unpublished writer, and just started sending out query letters. And it took me 3 years, but I finally did find a publisher. And then that just opened the floodgates. Once that got published, it's like, wow, this is pretty cool. And it just opened the floodgates to all these other stories that, you know, were in my head. And so I've just gone from there. And it's been a lot. I mean, it's a lot of work, but it's a labor of love. And it's pretty cool when you have readers that keep looking for your next book. I mean, that's, you know, when I have book signings and people will come up and say, I'm here for your latest book. And I had a lot of that this summer with the new book that came out. And it was just, it's pretty surreal at times when you think, wow, these people are investing their time and their money to read my books. And it's very rewarding in that respect. You know, that piece of it is what keeps me going, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning when I'm trying to get to my word count, or I'm trying to, you know, slog through, you know, 3 pages of edits from my editor, or, you know, there's a lot of very lonely times when you're a writer, but, you know, it's having readers that appreciate your work that make it all worthwhile.
And it's fun that now you can actually get back out there and meet your fans, because that during the pandemic period, it was really difficult for authors.
Yes. Yeah, that was tough. It was tough not only because you couldn't connect with readers, you know, in person, but just, you know, just the whole psychology of, you know, the pandemic, that hit me. You know, in the beginning, it affected my writing. I struggled to write, and I think that's why it took longer than usual for this book to get out, because I really was struggling with, you know, like, you know, people were dying and I'm writing fiction. You know, at first I was questioning what I was doing, but then I had so many people say to me, yeah, but you're providing an escape in this crazy world. And I said, okay, all right. I get it.
And it is important. It's very important. You know, for me, I get so many books every week. And I can tell you, I gravitated to the ones that took me away from it. And when I got kept getting books from people writing about a pandemic, another type of pandemic, I got two books about a new pandemic of leprosy. And, you know, I was looking for the escape books especially I love suspense books because it involves so many parts of your brain because you're thinking about clues, you're visualizing things, and you do forget about the outside world, which is it's a great thing that authors do.
Yeah, I realize that now, which is great. So now I'm back on track. But you're right about the whole pandemic storyline. I've had many people ask me if I would include something like that, and I said never.
No, I'm telling authors that I can't take it. I can read three pages, and I know my nerves can't take it. It's simple as that. I mean, I know, you know, bad things happen and people died and people got really, but there's a limit, you know, and I need a good suspense, and this is definitely a good suspense. Now, you mentioned editors and editing. A lot of my listeners, it's funny, actually, during the pandemic, many of my listeners started writing after not writing, you know, dreaming about writing, because I always start this program. This is a program for people who are dreaming of writing. Well, during the pandemic, they did actually have time and they did start writing. And now they're at that point where what's next? And you mentioned the two important things that I'd like you to mention again, query letters and editing. One, I had a number of my listeners, they'd email me and they'd say, oh, thank you, Patsy. You inspired me. I finished my book. I'm ready to publish. And then I have to sort of send them like a very calming email saying, well, I'm happy that you've finished your book, but I think there are a few more steps like editing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and query letters.
Yeah, it's true. I think, you know, when first-time writers, they're so anxious to get it published that they don't realize there are a lot more steps, and those steps can be daunting. I mean, and it's probably just as well they don't realize all those steps are there. They may never get started writing.
Exactly.
But once you have that manuscript, we cannot be objective about our own work. I tell people, once you finish your manuscript, put it aside, you know, for a few weeks, you know, if you can stand it, just put it aside for a few weeks, then go back and reread it, rewrite it, because then you bring a fresh perspective. You're not objective, but a fresher perspective to it, and you rewrite it. And do that as many times as you need to get it to where you think it's the best it can be. But then you send it to a professional editor. You'll have to hold your breath at that point until it comes back. But I know I always do when I send my manuscript to it. You'd think by now I'd be okay with doing it, but you put your heart and soul into it. So you hold your breath because you're sending it off to someone to dissect it and judge it and, you know, give you feedback. But it's all very, very important feedback, and you really have to listen to your editor. But you need to get a good editor, not your next door neighbor who used to be the editor for the school newspaper or whatever.
Exactly.
You need to be a professional editor, and you have to listen. You know, sometimes it's hard. With that first book, I sent it off to the editor, and the first thing she did was I'd written it with a prologue and an epilogue, because I love reading books like that. And the first thing she did was to completely remove the prologue and the epilogue. She said that things, you know, it didn't need it. And I was...
it's always hard, isn't it?
Yes, I was heartbroken. So it took me a couple days to kind of get over that.
I know.
Finally, I thought, okay, you know, she's a professional. She knows what she's doing. You got to trust her. And sure enough, she knew what she was doing, because I'd had it so wrapped up, you know, tightly at the end of the epilogue, there was no room for a sequel, much less a series.
See.
She definitely knew what she was doing.
Okay.
Then with The Woman Underwater, I didn't write it that way, but the editor came back and said, I think the first chapter and the last chapter should be a prologue and an epilogue. So I got them after all.
Finally. Well, I think, as I said, it's a great book. It's a book that will keep people wondering what's happening to this guy, where is he, and I just want to say, you know, for a really nice read, it's called The Woman Underwater. Very character development is perfection in this book. And I hope to hear from you. If somebody options your book, will you come back here and announce it on Joy on Paper?
I'd be happy to, Patsy.
Because I don't get a lot of breaking news, you know, but I would love to have you on to announce that, because I think somebody's going to pick it up.
That would be wonderful. Thank you so much for your endorsement.
Okay. So what's your website where people can find and where people can find you?
My website is pennygochin.com, and my books are available on print or ebook and all the usual online retailers like Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, but also bookstores as well. If a bookstore doesn't already have them on the shelf, they can very easily order them. And on my website, I do have a link where you can find your nearest independent bookstore. I love to support.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Local stores.
That's a great thing to do. Well, Penny, I think it was just wonderful to talk to you today. You take care. I'm sure you're already writing your next book, because once you find that joy on paper, you can't give it up, right?
That is so true, and I am writing the next one. But thank you, Patsy. I appreciate it.
Okay. I'll have you back here soon, I'm sure.
Sounds great.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye-bye now. Okay. She's nice. We're going to do a book buzz, and then I'm going to come back, and I'm looking forward to talking to John Vanek about miracles.
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2021 release in audiobook, The 11th Gate by Nancy Kress, a multiple Nebula and Hugo Award-winning author. Blackstone Audio produced this audiobook with stellar narration by Braden Wright. The novel is also available in print and ebook. Now, let's download the book buzz. When an explosion near a newly discovered stargate kills citizens of Paragoi Corporation, the first interstellar war breaks out between the corporation and the Landry Libertarian Alliance. The person responsible confesses to Rachel Landry, the head of the alliance, explaining it was an accident. With the fate of the 8 worlds at stake, Rachel partners with Philip Anderson, a citizen of the neutral world Polyglot. Philip, a philosopher, undergoes a risky procedure to expand the functions of his brain in hopes of connecting with the quantum realm in order to discover the secrets of the stargates. Meanwhile, the military commander of Paragoi Corporation, Luis Martinez, battles amongst the stars against a warmongering granddaughter of Rachel Landry, despite Rachel's protests to end the fighting. Luis captures another granddaughter of Rachel's, and their initial hatred of each other morphs into something else as the truth about the war, the stargates, and the nature of reality itself emerges. The high-speed political sci-fi thriller offers an equal mix of high-octane interstellar battle, mind-stretching scientific and philosophical musings about the nature of the universe, and thorough character studies of flawed protagonists seeking their version of utopia. Author Nancy Kress has written 33 books, and her work has won 6 Nebulas, 2 Hugos, a Sturgeon, and the John W. Campbell Memorial Award. This is Bria Burton with your futuristic fiction fix, signing off.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest, John A. Vanek, and the name of his book is Miracles, and it is a Father Jake Austin mystery. Hi, John.
Hi, Patsy.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Okay. Now, you know, I didn't get you when this book was released, but I wanted to say that I had it sort of on the side of my reading table, and I kept thinking about you. And so finally I had an opportunity to have you on because I found this book fascinating, and I was so interested in the character that you've developed here, Father Jake Austin. Tell us about it.
Father Jake is kind of a 21st century version of Father Brown. Although he's different in that he's had a tough childhood, comes from a broken family, ended up in a bloody overseas war. So Father Jake's got a bit more of an edge than Father Brown. But there are now four books in the series. They're not really about religion or the priesthood, however. They're about broader issues like spirituality and life at the crossroads of good and evil.
Well, that's what I knew that there were four books, but you know, I have to sort of pick one book out of the ones that I wanted. And since I had this one, and as I said, I kept it on the side, and I don't know why. You know, as I said, I've been very completely overwhelmed during the past year, you know, with everything that's been going on. But I just kept this book on the side. There was something about it, something that sort of touched me. And I wanted just to learn more about the storyline and about your other books in the series.
Father Jake, the character, is loosely based on a priest friend of mine who was a good friend, and we sat around one night having a beer, and he said to me, John, I don't know what to do with these feelings I have for this nun. And I nearly fell off my chair. I was raised Catholic, and I had my priests up on a pedestal. And I realized, what it made me realize is this spiritual man was struggling with something that everybody struggles with. And it made me think about stereotypes and how we stereotype people because of their jobs. You think you know a doctor or a lawyer because of what they do, but you really don't. So I wanted to make the story about someone like that. And I made Father Jake a very spiritual man, but I made him flawed as well. And he struggles with things that everybody else struggles with. There are two other main characters that occur in all the books. And the other character that I put in to make Father Jake's life a little miserable is I put his old high school sweetheart in town. And she's a blind woman. And I wrote the character fictionally, and then I met a good friend now who's a blind woman, and she's helped me make Emily a more realistic character and a lot of fun. The third main character is the sheriff, and he's fictional, but his sense of humor and his relationship with Jake, his honest relationship with Jake, are based on good friends of mine from back in Ohio.
Well, you know, it's I would say that there is this spirituality that does run through the books. I've read three of them, including Absolution, and I listened to one of them. Which one was it? I think I listened to one of them. Was it? No, I think I read it. Anyway, I like that there's this spiritual element, that there's this thoughtful element. Exactly as you said, looking at people from a different angle, trying to understand them, and this is certainly what Father Jake does.
Of course, it's all wrapped around mysteries in each of the books, so he has many things to deal with.
Exactly. When you came out with the first idea, did you originally think that you were going to be writing a series, or were you just doing a sort of one-off, and then it just happened that you realized the character was so strong that you could continue with the series?
No, it was intended to be a one-time thing, but I got so wrapped up with the three main characters that they have come to live in my head, as you know. That's, happens with writers.
That definitely happens. It, you once they get in your head, you can't get rid of them, even if you wanted to, because they do take on a life of their own. And you've had some really nice, compliments from some really fine writers who have been impressed with your work. Now, had you...
That's true. Thank you.
So that, when your first book came out, I mean, when did you start writing?
The first book came out in 2018, and it's been about a year between each of the books. That's pretty much what it takes me. I'm working on the fifth one right now, which is challenging me, because I've put some... I get readers sending me emails wanting me to take on some of the big issues in the Catholic Church, and for this fifth book, I've decided to deal with a pedophile priest, which is a little bit like walking on a knife blade as a writer. And I worked in a hospital for most of my life, and the hospital always had rumors about ghosts. So the fifth book is going to contain a ghost, and it's opened up all new avenues for me to think about and write with.
Well, you were...
It's been exciting.
You were, I mean, you're a physician, so you worked for most of your life, I would think, in hospitals, right?
Correct. You had some hospital time, too, didn't you?
Oh, yes. I started working in a hospital when I was 14 as a candy striper. Do you remember those girls?
Yes.
I don't think they have them anymore. You know, all this privacy stuff, and I don't think the girls today, they're all on their cell phones, so I'm not sure if any, but I loved it. And then later on I went into medical technology. And so I spent a lot of time in hospitals, especially I always liked the night shift or the, you know, starting like at 3 and working till 11 at night. I always found that so mysterious and exciting.
Well, because I worked in a hospital, I wanted to put my Father Jake in the hospital as much as I could, because obviously that's where I'm comfortable. And I started doing some research and found that a lot of Protestant ministers are also physicians. And I kept looking into it and found about 100 Catholic priests who are both physicians and priests. And I have a friend who is a priest who is a beta reader for me, and he said, Jack, or John, you need to put this character into the Chameleon Order. Well, I'd never heard of chameleons, but they're like the Jesuits or the Franciscans, and in fact, besides the normal vows that they take an additional vow to care for the sick, and they're worldwide order. So Father Jake became a chameleon because of my experience in the hospital. So he's in and out of hospitals in all four of the books.
And particularly, of course, in Miracles.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about the story without giving it away, but there's definitely miracles. And, you know, I hope that people do believe in miracles because they do happen.
Well, miracles is, let me give you the elevator pitch, the pitch you're supposed to have memorized.
Yeah.
That you can sell the book. For miracles, it's Father Jake Austin's life is hurled into the vortex of three storms, a dying sister, a bleeding Virgin Mary statue, and a comatose infant in the intensive care unit. And these three plots all swirl through the book, and at the end of the book, I tie them together as a source of unexpected miracles. And when I started writing that book, I'm one of those people who writes by the seat of my pants. I have a beginning. I know roughly the end and the middle, but I let the characters direct me. And actually writing that book was a lot of fun because my characters took me in all kinds of interesting directions. And yet they took me back at the very end to tie it all together. So it was great fun to write.
Well, I'm not sure why I... This book, particularly this book, I had such a feeling about it. There, perhaps at the time I was involved with people who were ill, people who were in hospitals, and it just really, I gravitated towards it. And then, as I said, because it's really this, it's the second book, right, in the series. And yeah. I knew that other books came out afterwards, but I was like... For some reason, this particular book just grabbed me, and you know, I want people to believe in miracles because they do happen sometimes, and I think that something in this book just made it something I couldn't put down. And although you know we went through all this pandemic-y time, and we went through all these bad months, month after month, I kept. You know, having had this book, sometimes I don't have time to do a book for some reason. I, you know, might not go back, you know, a ways. But I wanted to have you on because I felt that it's important. It's an important little series. You've got the right elements here. And I think that it's just something that people will find. I found it fascinating, both from the medical side, the priestly side. And tell us then about how you got the sheriff involved and his character. I found him fascinating, too.
Well, I wanted Jake to... Obviously, he has entree to the priesthood, and he's got entree into the hospital, but I needed a law enforcement character. And he reminds me a great deal of my best friend. And what I wanted between the sheriff and Jake in particular... is an honest friendship where no holes are barred. When Jake is out of bounds, his friend will, the sheriff will tell him, and vice versa. And the readers seem to really enjoy the interplay between those characters. And I think that's worked out well, and the sheriff's now become a strong character on his own. I like having three characters because they each have different strengths, and what I like to do with it when I'm starting a book is throw a hurdle in front of the three of them and see how they either go over the hurdle or around it using their various strengths. And so all the mysteries are solved pretty much as a team effort between the three of them.
Now, of course, you started this rather recently. Did you ever think when you were young that you would become a novelist?
Oh, my. Yeah, I fell in love with writing. I read a lot as a young person. I fell in love with writing when I went to college, and I had one of those great professors who, he knew I was going to medical school, but he saw something in my writing, and he planted a seed and told me to pursue it, not give it up. And for a while, I was in medical school and an internship residency. There was no time for that, but when I got the chance, I had young children, but I wrote two books. They're both in a drawer in my desk, and they'll never see the light of day because they're not what I wanted. But what they taught me is I needed to learn the craft. So I spent many years working on the craft before I finally decided to test myself with book one, Daros, which, by the way, is a military acronym, date of expected return from overseas. But it's not a book about war. It's a story about coming home from the war.
Well, I think you've nailed this craft because your writing is very fine. Your dialogue is great. And you're right. You have these three characters and the dialogue that you create between them, it just reads perfectly.
Well, thank you. I wrote them as being three best friends, and I hope it comes across that way. I think what I love best is when readers say to me, I enjoyed the mystery, but I learned something about the church or the Catholicism, or I learned something about medicine, or I learned something about my own spirituality. I mean, I think that is the most joyous thing that comes out of writing for me when I hear that.
Well, I think that's what got me. That's why I kept the book and, you know, kept always sort of on the back burner that I have to have you on, because you do connect. You do connect, I think, people with the spirituality. And I think it's you've done a beautiful job and a fine mystery. It's a really fine mystery. I love that when, well, I love the reveal. I love how you give just enough so that we, you know, it's fascinating. Again, you have a lot of depth to it, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful book. And I understand, you know, well, now, of course, things can be sort of perking up again that you can do events and maybe go to book signings. Have you been able to do that now since the pandemic is sort of over?
Yeah, thank goodness. I just came back from, excuse me, I just came back from a reading, some readings up in the Midwest. I didn't get to Michigan, sorry about that. but that's always so much fun. And I love doing book clubs, too. Those are my two favorite things to do.
Oh, and it is fun to meet the fans and to, you know, one of the things is that when you meet them and you find out that your books have made a difference in their lives, have opened their eyes, and have touched their hearts, it's a big thing, isn't it?
It's one of the best royalties you get out of being a writer.
Exactly. Well, I think you've done a wonderful job with all of your books. And what's the name of the newest one is, what is it?
The newest book, the last one that's out is Bedeviled, Bedeviled. And the one I'm working on, the fifth book, has no title at this point.
Okay, well, I think the Father Jake Austin mysteries are really great and lots of fun to read. And I hope that people will get them. And do you have a website that you want people to go to?
Oh, I'd love that. It's www.johnvanek.author, J-O-H-N, V as in Victor, A-N-E-K, author, .com.
Okay, and the books are available online and perhaps wherever books are sold. And I'm going to tell you something. I realize in my head, I heard the books. This happens to me sometimes when I'm reading a book, either I see it as a movie or when there's like really good dialogue, I hear it in my mind because I'm a very sort of visual, audible person. So I don't know. They're not on Audible yet, are they?
Not yet. They've come out. The first three are out in large print now.
Okay, that's good. That's good. I think a lot of people will enjoy that. But I think they would make great Audible books, too, because they just read so well.
From your lips to God's ears, I'll talk to my publisher.
Yes, I think people would enjoy and enjoy hearing them because I love books where I've sort of taken to Audible books. I didn't at first take to them, but now I love them, and I love hearing that. I love hearing good dialogue in an Audible book. And I think you've got it in your books.
Well, thank you. When I write them, I see them as movies in my head, which is
okay.
Not what I expected when I started writing.
Well, it's you've done a great job. I just want to thank you again for being on Joy on Paper today. John A. Vanek, I think you're a fine writer, and it's just been a joy to talk to you.
Thank you so much, Patsy.
Oh, and I think we have a mutual friend, right?
We do.
And
Carol Perry?
Carol J. Perry. And did you know that October 25th is going to be Carol J. Perry Day here on Joy on Paper?
I will tune in.
It's going to be the entire hour because she has a new release from her Haunted Haven, a series that is set right here in our area. And I'm so excited that she's going to be on because the book is called High Spirits. And we're going to be in high spirits that day. But I hope that you'll tune in because Carol has been a great influence on this program. She was the first guest I had in the studio. So over 7 years ago now. And so that's why I wanted to create a special day just for her, October 25th, and she will be here. And I hope you'll be listening. And again, thank you so much, John, for being on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, you know, it is a miracle. Things are sometimes, it is a miracle. And I kept that book. It's strange. I kept that book for a long time next to me, and I didn't have him on for a while there, so I didn't have him on for the following books, but we're going to have them up on my website. I will have it, and all you have to do is go to RadioJoyOnPaper.com, and I'm going to have a link to his books on there, and also a link to all of his books because he is a fine writer. And this just proves to you, to all of you out there, you say you want to write or you dream of writing, well, do it. Just start writing because you never know. You know what's going to happen. Look, he was a physician for most of his life. When he retires, he starts writing, and he writes very well. I mean, his writing is superb. So all you have to do is you need, and as he said, it is craft. You have to put in that time and that energy and that dedication, and you have to be tough on yourself. You cannot just let yourself sort of take it easy. It's a craft, and just like anything, you have to get it right and fine-tune it. But once you do, boy, you never know, because one of these days, as I always tell you, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know. Unless you start writing. So start writing, and just like Carol J. Perry. Whoa, two series, my goodness. Anyway, everybody, say something nice to somebody today. It's going to be a long weekend, and everybody should be very happy, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything you do for me. And he saluted me, and I saluted him, because I should have been a general. Oh, boy, would I. Oh, my goodness, I can't even think how great a general I would have been. Everyone, I've got 500 books about battles. Yes, I really do. Bye-bye now.